Well, thank you all for being here today. It's great to see a full house. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors on this paper. Ellen Wilson is the principal investigator, and she's here in the audience, and Ghazaleh Samandari. And again, today I'll be presenting findings from our mixed method study looking at breastfeeding experiences among young teen mothers in North Carolina. As probably everyone knows, adolescents have a lower rate of breastfeeding initiation. They tend to breastfeed for shorter durations and are less likely to breastfeed exclusively. And this is data from 2007 from the National Immunization Survey comparing teens under 20 to the national average of women. And so previous research suggests that teens have characteristics of mothers who are less likely to breastfeed, such as being single, having lower levels of education and income. But there's quite a bit of qualitative research, specifically among adolescent mothers, showing that age may be an important factor in the decision to breastfeed, such that younger teens may have less maturity and have less exposure to breastfeeding role models and breastfeeding education. School is a very pertinent barrier to teens, more so than adults. And teens may perhaps feel more unease or be more embarrassed to breastfeed in public, and as well as lack some of the confidence to ask for help or to gain support, and lack confidence in their ability to breastfeed. But some of the limitations of previous literature is that most of the national statistics aggregate all teens under 20, so we don't have a good idea of what breastfeeding rates are like among younger teens, especially school-age teens. And the majority of studies really focus on the decision to breastfeed in the hospital. And so less is known about teens' experiences once they leave the hospital. And most studies have focused on urban, African-American, and white youth. And so our study was designed to kind of fill this gap by examining breastfeeding experiences among a diverse group of youth from rural and urban areas, and includes African-American, white, and Hispanic youth. And we looked at youth in varying periods of the postpartum year. And so we used a mixed method design, and this was the best design for our study because it allowed us to obtain representative data on some of the breastfeeding rates among teens in North Carolina, and at the same time complement it with qualitative data to really understand the patterns that we were seeing. And so I'll start by going through the quantitative study, and then I'll follow with the qualitative research design. So we used the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System from 2002 to 2005 and 2007, and we excluded data from 2006 because a response rate threshold of 70% for the overall year was not reached. And for those of you who aren't familiar with PRAMS, it's a continuous state-level survey of women who deliver live-born infants. And so our data is on 389 adolescents between the ages of 13 and 17 years who answered the main breastfeeding question. And teens were either sent a survey in the mail or interviewed over the phone, and the median date at which teens fill out the questionnaire or were interviewed was 4 months postpartum in our sample. And the measures that I'll talk about today are just initiation, duration, exclusivity, and the barriers that teens faced. And for our analysis, we did a descriptive analysis, so we compared these measures by race, ethnicity, and we used chi-square tests to determine whether there were significant differences between the groups. And we used the state-level weights to adjust for the sampling design, and so the percentages that you'll see in this presentation are weighted so that they represent all teens in North Carolina who gave birth to a live-born infant between the ages of 13 and 17. And so this is just a quick overview of our sample. As you can see, the majority had their delivery paid by Medicaid and were accessing services through WIC. And for the qualitative study, we conducted semi-structured interviews with 22 adolescents in Central North Carolina. And teens were ages 13 to 17, and we used purposive sampling, which meant that we wanted to get a minimum of about 3 youth in each of our groups that we were interested in looking at. So that's African American, white, and Hispanic teens in both rural and urban areas. And we conducted recruitment through organizations that work with adolescents, and teens were interviewed at different times during the first year postpartum, with the majority between with their babies between 6 months and 12 months of age. And our interview guide looked at positive and negative aspects of breastfeeding, families and friends' attitudes about breastfeeding, sources of information and support, as well as breastfeeding experiences. And we imported the transcripts into NVivo software, and all of the text that fell under breastfeeding was coded, and then we used all the text from the breastfeeding code and put it into matrices along with other characteristics of the teens so that we could really understand their breastfeeding experiences in the context of their lives. And this is just a quick summary of our qualitative sample. Okay, and now I'm going to start with the quantitative results. So as you can see here, just over half of the teens in the PRAM study initiated breastfeeding. It was 52%, but the rates fall off pretty quickly. So by 1 month postpartum, half of those who had started had already stopped. We also saw significant disparities by race, ethnicity. And so in blue, you can see that almost 90% of the Latina adolescents initiated breastfeeding, and then followed by whites and African Americans. And this pattern carried through with continuation, and you can see that rates or exclusive breastfeeding was really low in this sample. And so the PRAM study asks teens who never breastfed to choose reasons. These are, you know, a questionnaire that already has given reasons that they can check, and they can check more than one. But the top reason for not breastfeeding is that they didn't like breastfeeding. And among these barriers, we looked for statistically significant differences by race, ethnicity, and the only difference that we found was that African American youth were more likely to say that they didn't like breastfeeding. In terms of continuation, this question is asked of all youth who started breastfeeding but had stopped by the time that they were interviewed. So they typically had stopped by about 4 months postpartum. And as you can see, going back to school or work was a big reason for stopping. And then a lot of technical or lactational issues, such as, you know, perceiving that breast milk didn't satisfy the infant, feeling that they weren't producing enough milk, and nipple pain. Okay, so now I'm going to go into the qualitative results. And so our qualitative findings really kind of delve a little bit more deeply into understanding the barriers that we saw in the quantitative data. And so what we heard from the teens who didn't breastfeed was that many of them just didn't want to. It kind of mirrors what we saw in the quantitative data. And African American teens were less likely to articulate exact reasons for not breastfeeding, but their discourses and their stories seemed to reflect family norms where formula feeding was the more accepted form of infant feeding. And we also saw that black teens reported less exposure to breastfeeding in their families, whereas Latinas reported the most family members, female family members, who had breastfed. And then there was a general impression among the teens that breastfeeding was uncommon, and some of them mentioned that they didn't know any of their friends who were moms who had ever breastfed. And we heard a lot of negative stories, and as you'll see from this quote, it really had an impact of dissuading some teens from breastfeeding. So during my pregnancy, I did think about breastfeeding, but my cousin breastfed, and she said that she missed a feeding, and her breast got clogged, and that was a scary thing to hear. So it changed my mind. And then Some of the barriers to initiation were also barriers to continuation. So, for example, some of the youth who didn't breastfeed really said it was out of fear of pain that they didn't want to start. But pain was the number one reason that was cited among adolescents who stopped within the first 2 weeks postpartum. And then many teens encounter difficulty nursing, just establishing their milk supply, getting the infant to latch, and they would say things like, you know, the baby just wouldn't take it, and my milk ran out, or there wasn't enough. And so when they were perceiving that their baby was getting fussy and they weren't able to, you know, help it, then they would, you know, turn to the breast pump or to formula, as in their words, the baby had to get fed. And then four adolescents stopped breastfeeding upon returning to school, and they just said that the logistical difficulties of trying to pump and breastfeed and go to school was too much. And that's conveyed in this next quote that I'll share. I quit once I went back to school because there was like no way I could do it. I mean, because I would have to like go pump like every 2 to 3 hours, and I just couldn't do that. We did have three teens that continued to breastfeed upon returning to school, but all of them talked about how challenging that was. So all but two teens in our study received information about breastfeeding prenatally from their prenatal care providers, and almost all of them received information and support for breastfeeding at the hospital. And two teens actually received lactational consultant support at the hospital. However, once teens left the hospital, it was very rare for them to receive support. And despite, you know, contact with healthcare providers and social service workers during the first few weeks postpartum, in most cases, teens didn't receive the support they needed to facilitate continued breastfeeding. For example, a rural Hispanic teen told us how a home visitor came and brought her all these papers and, you know, information on breastfeeding, but it didn't address her specific needs. She had nipple pain and a low milk supply. And several teens talked about getting a free breast pump from WIC, but one teen mentioned how nobody showed her how to use it, and after a week of her nipples cracking and bleeding, she stopped. Family support was very important, and over two-thirds of the youth in the qualitative studies shared that they received support and encouragement from their family. But what we saw is that the family couldn't really offer them the technical guidance that was needed to continue breastfeeding. There are some limitations to this analysis. With the PRAMS data, a non-response analysis done a few years ago showed that young teens and minorities are less likely to participate. And so although our survey is weighted to adjust for non-response, the numbers we're showing might be overestimates of teens who are more likely to breastfeed. And in our qualitative study, we recruited youth through organizations that were serving teens, and this really allowed us to get teens who were both in school and out of school and with varying degrees of programmatic and clinical support, but we may have missed the most marginalized youth. So in summary, we saw that in both our qualitative and quantitative study, over half of the teens were motivated to breastfeed. And, you know, we saw that, as we see in kind of the national statistics among adult women, that Hispanic teens had the most positive breastfeeding outcomes. And the racial ethnic disparities that we observed really seemed to reflect the social and cultural norms that emerged in our qualitative study. And then the short duration and the high rates of weaning within the first month postpartum really points to the support that was needed. And teens faced a lot of barriers that we see, you know, all breastfeeding women face, but they did not have the support that they needed. And there was an overall impression in our study that school was just, breastfeeding and school were incompatible. And this is in contrast to a recent qualitative study that found that with adequate support and from schools and their social network, that teens were successfully able to continue breastfeeding. And so based on our findings, we just had a few recommendations. The important influence that family members played really points to the need of involving mothers and grandmothers and partners in counseling. And the negative stories from peer groups really seem to outweigh the positive aspects of breastfeeding, and so more work needs to be done, perhaps through peer counseling, to combat these negative peer norms. And then just the barriers that teens face really points to the need for more hands-on technical support in the postpartum period after hospital discharge, and then more support transitioning back to school, and once they get to school, more flexibility in their schedule, and a private place to pump and store their breast milk and store the pump is needed. Good timing. Okay, and I'd just like to acknowledge all of those people who helped make this study possible. Thank you.
So we'll take questions. I want to mention there's like 8 or 9 seats up front here. You folks want to come up and sit down. There's plenty of room. And any questions real quick? Okay. Yes? Karen McLuhan? Yeah, you. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm curious if you identified any barriers or facilitators by age. And also, I want to see if I'm correct, the people who said that they didn't initiate because they didn't like, they never initiated, right?
Like one teen said, you know, she kind of thought it was gross and didn't like the idea of putting her boobie in her baby's mouth. And some of them just seemed to not really buy into the benefits. Like, you know, one teen said, well, you know, my doctor said the baby would be smarter, but I think if my baby's going to be smart, you know, she would be born that way. He or she would be born that way. So it was more of kind of just a general, like, it just seemed to reflect to us kind of a norm that they weren't really exposed to it very much. And then by age, we didn't really look at, you know, analysis by younger teens and older teens. I don't know if, Ellen, you have anything to add. Nothing really, like, popped out as being like, oh, I mean, we had, like, 14-year-olds who were breastfeeding, and then, you know, like 17-year-olds who weren't. So it was hard to tell with such a small sample, but potentially in the PRAMS data, you could look at that.
Yes. We'll do the two in the back and the two here on the left, and then we'll wait till the end of the session for more.
I'm wondering in your qualitative study if you asked them about contraceptives. One of the things we find with our teen moms in particular is that, you know, they haven't even finished delivering their shot.
Yeah, so I didn't say, but this was actually part of a larger study that was looking at prenatal and postpartum health behaviors among teens. And there's actually going to be a presentation here at APHA by Ellen. When is it? Tomorrow at what time? 10:30 on pre- and postpartum contraception. And I mean, I didn't analyze that part, so I can't answer that question as much, but I bet if you came to the presentation or could find out more. Yeah.
In the back. Yeah.
I was wondering if you looked at the characteristics of that small group of women that continued exclusive breastfeeding for 4 months, and you mentioned the two students who pushed through and continued breastfeeding while they were at school.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything that could be learned from the experience of those women, what characteristics, the barriers were all really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about that small group of women that allowed them?
Yeah, so I just realized I haven't been repeating the question. So,
nobody has.
Okay. So the question is, you know, what can we learn from the teens that persevered and really were able to continue breastfeeding? Unfortunately, from the PRAMS data, they didn't ask about facilitators. But from our qualitative study, we really found that those youth were the most motivated from the get-go, and they had lots of support, and they were more likely to have multiple family members who had breastfed, and that really seemed to stick out.
There was a question, yeah.
Did you look at, when you talk about prenatal, they had healthcare providers that talked about breastfeeding, did you look at when during prenatal, was it early in prenatal care versus late?
Yeah.
Most infants decide that feeding methods early in pregnancy, so did that discussion happen early versus late?
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't look at the timing. I mean, we could tell who learned about it more through prenatal care. We asked really open-ended questions of kind of where did you find out about breastfeeding, where did you learn? And so some people would say, oh, my doctor talked to me about it, whereas others really emphasized, you know, learning about it and getting support from people in the hospital. So unfortunately, but that's a really good suggestion.
And real quickly.
Yeah, it was very, so the question was what kind of support was received from the fathers of the baby. So at the time of the interview in our qualitative study, half of the teens were still with their baby's daddy, and none of them, you know, we didn't ask specifically like what support did you receive from their partner, but none of them ever mentioned in all of these open-ended questions receiving support or encouragement from their partners. And we were surprised by that because, you know, other literature on teen breastfeeding showed that, you know, teens reported that their partners were a big, important support. So, yeah, I didn't show that here, but that was an interesting finding. It might be because many of the teens lived with their moms, and so really that was kind of where their source of support was coming from. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine.